I've got tired of just clapping. Good evening, everybody. My name is Chester McGee, and I'm a grateful alcoholic and drug addict. Through the grace of God and His mercy and His love and His patience and His tolerance and His forgiveness, I haven't used any drug. I've found it necessary, but I haven't used any. Some of y'all have kissed it after a while. God's been so good till I just couldn't afford to go backwards. I haven't used anything since July the 23rd of 1977, which I'm eternally grateful. Thank you. Before I get started, I'd like to invite God into the meeting for me, because I'm not talking. I'm just asking Him to use me as a vessel, because there might be one person out there tonight that's got one of them false faces on, and you're skinning and you're grinning and you're looking good on the outside and you're busting loose on the inside. So we just come have a moment of silence. Thank you. I came... No, that's a lie. I was tricked into saving my own life beginning July the 6th of 1977. I came in here for all the wrong reasons. So what I tell people, either I've done it or either I've thought it. So if you're here, don't be ashamed of yourself. You made it right on time. I came in here to get my mama off my back, to get my old lady off my back, to get the Dallas Police Department off my back, to get them fellas off my back that was looking for me because they had put a contract out on me because I was such a nice fella. I came here to learn how to drink and use drugs moderately so I could save me some money. Because I wasn't weak like y'all. Hell no. I was a man. Didn't know how to spell it, but I was a man. Woo! I was a lot of things when I got here. But thank God I stayed around just to be sober and just to be human. You know, I tell people all the time, it makes me absolutely no difference why and when and how you got here. I'm just grateful that you made it. Whatever avenue that you had to take to get here, whether somebody tricked you to get here or they lied to you to get here, be grateful for whatever it is that worked and let it keep working, because there is such a thing as living two lives in one. And I've had the pleasure of living two lives in one. One I'll get to in just a few minutes, and another one, but I've been blessed to have 23 years of being clean and sober, and that's a miracle from where I come from, and I'll share that with you in just a few minutes. But I would like to give honor to the old-timers that was here when I got here, and a lot of them are dead and gone, and they instill a lot of things inside of me. One was that you can only keep what you have by giving it away. It's never too early, never too late, never too rainy, and never too tired to try to help another alcoholic, and I believe in that, you know, because... A friend and I, stand up, Kirk rode down here with me. Y'all give him a hand. That's my road dog. Show you how determined we are. We came down here and the light kept saying, what did it say? Coolant low. Well, I said, well, hell, the cooler going to be low if I keep driving or not. So we made it. So y'all just got to pray for us and we make it back. See, I'm the kind of person now, I live my life that either I trust God or I don't. I can't bullshit, excuse my expression. Because I realize in this lifetime now, because that you get to a point where either God is or He isn't. Bottom line, but I wasn't always there. Born and raised in Dallas, Texas, July the 28th, 1949. That means I'm 51 years old and I can jump to the shot of the top of the roof and say, thank you, God. Because I don't have no business being here. I tell people all the time, do you want justice or do you want mercy? Well, I tell them to give me all the mercy I can get, because justice, I'd be 6 feet under in TDC. So through the grace of God, I'm here tonight, and I give honor and all the glory and whatever words you want to say, because it's a miracle. My first drink was at the age of about 4 or 5. My grandfather gave it to me. My first hit a marijuana. I was about 12 or 13. My cousin gave it to me. My first drink of cough syrup, I was about 12 or 13. My other cousin gave it to me. My first pill, my other gave it to me. My first shot of heroin, my uncle gave it to me. So I have a family illness. And the subject is still spreading, excuse my expression. But you know what? I am so grateful for all those people that stuck with me in the beginning, because I was nothing nice. Absolutely. I was nothing nice. I came off the streets of Dallas, and I was carrying a knife and a gun. I'd cut your throat, I'd blow your brains out, because that's the way I live. And I hated myself. I didn't like me. I hated me because I used to be somebody. And that's where I was. Either I'm going to be somebody or I used to be somebody, because the summer going that I was now wasn't doing what the quarter, and I didn't like him. So when I came into this program and I went to the treatment center, and God, bless his heart, he was saying, son, he said, if you're not tired, then I'm tired for you, because I was a tired young man. When I came into the program, I had not combed my hair in X amount of days. I had not taken a bath in X amount of days. And I hadn't slept or ate in X amount of days. And the reason why I call, I put it X, because it didn't matter. Because when I came here, I was homicidal and suicidal. And whichever one came first didn't make no difference. Hopefully you didn't get in the way while I was trying to kill me. Woo, see, today I can laugh at me. It's real important. Listen to me, all you young people. Learn how to laugh at you and learn how to laugh with other people while they're laughing at you. Or some of that stuff ain't funny, but you got to choke it down. Especially if you got a sponsor like I got, and he just keep bringing me the truth, and I want to tell him where to, how high to go and how low to go at the same time, because I have to choke it down. Woo! The old timers always tell me, say, boy, so you tell how it was, what happened, and how it is now. You share your experience, strength, and hope. And I believe in doing that, because sometimes I need to hear where I came from, because sometimes I still forget, because my ego is not as big as it used to be. But when you get to living according to the way God wants you to live, or whatever the way it is, and you're living according to the way nature says you're supposed to live, sometimes you can forget things. You know, and I'm getting to that age, too. Some of y'all are going to catch that after a while. I'm going to pull off my coat. That's all I can take. Whew. Now, you know, I came into this program on July the 6th of 1977. And when I came in, I was beaten, I was battered, I was torn, I was stomped, I was kicked. But I was still cool. And some of y'all gonna understand that. Because, see, I still had my pride and I still had my ego. And I was not gonna allow y'all to change me, because I still wasn't that bad off. The first 3 days I was in detox, I don't remember. Because I was shooting between 300 and 500 hours of heroin on a daily basis. And I was drinking everything in sight, because I was trying my best to kill myself. Because I was already dead on the inside. This is a spiritual program. It's a spiritual program. See, when a person's spirit dies, it's just a matter of time before you go crazy mentally, or your body just completely deteriorate. And when I came in here, they told me, say, you have a thing called alcoholism, not alcoholism. That means it never go away. See, what I begin to realize, and I understand today, once you take away the alcohol, then you got to go to work on what's been going on all the time. Because alcohol masked a lot of my problems. Drugs masked a lot of my problems. So after about 3 days, I came to, and I began to realize that something needed to be changed, but I thought it was y'all. Because if I knew if I could just get the right combination in life, I'd be all right. So I came in here blamed, being black, being poor, being raised in the project. My daddy wasn't around. My mama worked all the time, didn't have the right kind of car, the right kind of food, the right kind of clothes. And then I got a little older, they couldn't find the right kind of woman. So it was everybody else's fault but mine. So when I got in here, y'all, You can just imagine this. I had this wall. I had this huge wall between me and life. And I was not going to allow anybody to get close to me. Because everybody I'd allowed to get close to me either pissed on me, or they ran out on me, or either they died. So I wasn't going to allow nobody else to get too close to me. Never understanding that I was not very close to myself. After 3 days, I came to, and the program that I was in, we had a person called Slim. And Slim was in charge of the sick room. And boy, was it a sick room. I mean, we were sick, man. We were puking and everything else at the same time. And, but you know, one thing I realized, that I stayed in the halfway house for 2 years. That was best, probably one of the best 2 years I ever spent in my life. Because as a process of going through and getting to know other people from all races, creeds, and color, and I began to let the walls melt down, and begin to come down, and I began to see other people as just as human beings, and that being enough. But being sober on top of it. But after about 3 days, I came to, and we'd be in a little dumbass meetings. You know how it is when you're at the little treatment, dumbass treatment center. We'd be in a little dumbass meeting, and somebody would say, well, I'm Sally Jane, and I'm an alcoholic. Another fellow would say, I'm Joe Blow, and I'm a drug addict. And I looked at him. I said, hell, I said, I'm Chester, I got bad luck. And I know I'm in the wrong place. But you know what I found out? It's virtually impossible to be in a treatment center and not have an alcohol or drug problem. No matter what your mind tell you. So here I am over there, and I caught that little fella. I said, Sidney, you told somebody you're a drug addict? He said, yeah. I said, I really feel sorry for you. Because I hadn't made it there yet. Honesty. This is how I developed honesty in the program. I said, lying and cheating and stealing is dishonest. So honesty must be the opposite. I didn't know. I had lost the ability to be. I had no idea what honesty was. But I began to sit around in them rooms. I began to listen to them other people. And they began to share me their experience, strength, and hope. And I just knew them people was lying. I knew they was lying because that where I come from, that was unheard of. You don't get sober and still be around long enough to talk about it unless you was in the jailhouse. So after about 17 days, I stayed around, and I took a three-hour pass. See, what I share with people that have relapsed, see, I didn't relapse. I wasn't around long enough to get nothing. I was just dry. Had a friend of mine told me a long time ago, say you can stay dry for so long until you become a fire hazard. And you can. Every time you look around, you be breaking out something. So be real careful about being dry. So I stayed around and I went out on a three-hour pass. And lo and behold, 3 hours almost killed me, but it also made me come back to life. I went to the same person I used to get my drug from, didn't cut it quite as much, but it gave me a little extra. And I put it in my veins, and it kept coming, and it kept coming, and it kept coming, and it kept coming, and it kept coming. And I began to pray, oh, Lord, please don't let me die like this. And the people that I was in the room with, my friends, they walked off and they left me for dead. See, what I try to help people to understand, be careful with the people that you call your friends, because the people that you think might be your friend just might be your enemy. And as I began to lay on that floor, and there's junk running through my veins, and I began to pray like I had never prayed before, like most of us pray. God, please don't let me die like this. I'll do whatever you want me to do. And I got up off that floor, and I went back to that treatment center that same night. And I OD'd again that same night. So God had been looking out for me a long time. One of the catalysts that got me into this program in 1973, my oldest sister got murdered by her husband. I lost my job. I lost the lady I was living with. I lost my first cousin out of Houston. My other cousin killed him. So anger and violence and all that rage has been around my life. But you know, only through working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have I changed. I can't change nobody else in this world. See, one thing I've learned today, if I don't change, then nothing else changes. But when I change, whether anything else changes or not, it has nothing to do with me. Because for so long I was so selfish and self-centered that I thought everything and everybody was supposed to revolve around me. And if you didn't, I would beat you up or try to trick you into doing what I want you to do, because I knew that you wanted me to be happy because I wanted you to be happy, because I was willing to do whatever I had to do to make you happy, even if it made me unhappy. You understand what I'm saying? So I lied, I cheated, I stole, I pretend, I shot con on people. I did everything I could to make some money and everything I could to make another person happy. But at the same time, I was dying on the inside. You know, I have to tell you the way it was, because that's the way it was. It was not pretty, you know. But you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to live. And that's what this program is about. to people that want to live and help another person learn how to live. You know, my grandfather, bless his heart, he gave me my first drink when I was about 4 years old. See, y'all got to understand, I talk fast. That's an old habit. I used to make my living talking fast. And I still make my living talking. I don't talk fast as I used to. Now I'm a counselor. I went from a cab driver to a counselor. Well, you, if you don't think there's a God up above, I'll kiss your foot. Woo! See, I came up. Let me just give you a picture of the person that I was as a young person. I grew up in the projects in West Dallas in the 50s. My mama worked all the time. I didn't know who my daddy was until about 13 or 14 years old. So I was the oldest boy of six kids. I was next to the oldest. And growing up in the projects, you learn how to maneuver. You learn how to do whatever it takes to keep your behind out of the crack. And then as I began to grow up, I was a scared little fat kid. I always been a little fat kid, still a pretty good sized fella now. But see, today I learned how to just accept myself and my size because I had to keep working at this deal. You know, there's a lot of things going on with me other than just my size, so I had to learn how to accept it. But when I was coming up, I always felt so insecure. I felt different. I felt alone. I felt lonely, and I was scared. But see, my grandmother, bless her heart, one day I was out playing with this little fella, and this little boy was just kicking my butt. I mean, he was kicking me royally. And my grandma caught me coming in the house. She said, "Baby," she said, "if you don't whip him, say I'm going to whip you." And I'm trying to figure out, what kind of grandma is this? You know, most grandmas trying to teach you about love and charity and, you know, being good to your neighbor. My grandma talking about kicking butt. But little did I understand what she was attempting to try to do with me. Because even as a child, I was always the little kid that in the neighborhood, I'd go around, I would like to meet people. I'd go around and just to talk to people and get to know people, especially in the country where we come from, around here in Texas, where all my family's from. I used to go and meet up all my ancestors over there during that time. So growing up in the city, I'd be in the city one part of the year and in the country the other part of the year. So here I am laid back in the country, but in the city, you know, you got to raise it up to another level. So by this time, my grandma caught me in the house, and she told me, said, "Son, say, if you don't whip him, say, I'm going to whip you." What I want you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, for 40-some years, even a lot of years in this program, I've been fighting. That's all I've ever known is to fight. Today, I choose not to fight. See, it gets to a point where it talks about in the big book, you have to cease fighting everything and everybody if you want some peace. And it's not easy. One thing I realize about peace, there's a price tag with peace. It's called laying down the armor. See, but when I came up, ladies and gentlemen, I had to pick it up because that's where I came from. If you didn't learn how to fight, boy, somebody's going to whoop your butt every day. And I wasn't going to take that. So from the first through the seventh grade, I made straight A's. I was not a dumb person. Never have been. You know, I say I might be fat, but I won't be dumb. And I meant that. So I was in spelling bee contests, and I played all different kind of sports, and I was always active. I've always been an active person because that always kept me out of myself and kept me being involved. And this is how I played football. When they snapped the ball, it was my job to unjoint your chin strap, kick you, spit on you, talk about your mama, try to knock your helmet off your head and break your arm and your leg at the same time if I could, because I was a very vicious individual. Because that's all I knew. Because that's the only thing I knew how to protect myself. But see, you got to understand, I lived a double life even as a child. Because on the outside, I was this very vicious person. But on the inside, I was this scared little fat kid. Wanting somebody to take care of me. That's what I really was. Because I was just scared as hell. But man, I wasn't going to allow nobody to get too close to me. Because man, I knew, I just didn't like them feelings that went along with it. And I pretended real well. So by the time I got to smoking that marijuana, I could kill my feelings. I throw me some Thunderbird wine in there. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, people say, man, I ended up on Thunderbird. I say, well, hell, I started out with the best. Some people have to end up on it. I started out drinking the best Thunderbird. But anyhow, what I'm getting at, ladies and gentlemen, is that if you're here, whether you got one day or 1 week or 1 month or 1 year, and you're going through your feelings, be grateful that you have them. Feelings are for a purpose. They're not good, they're not bad, they're just yours. And what I began to realize as a child, I didn't like my feelings. I didn't like the way I felt about me. I didn't like the way I felt about my surroundings. So I was always thinking about what was going to come because I didn't like nothing was going on. And I learned how to pretend at an early age. I played a football. I used to play football in high school. And I played baseball, and I played basketball, and I threw the shot put, and I played tennis, and I swam, and I did a little bit of everything. And one night we was playing a team out of Fort Worth, and I'd be full of that marijuana, I'd be full of pills, and I'd be full of Thunderbird, and that's what I'd be full of on the football field in high school. And that's how I played. I played reckless. I played to knock your ass out. Excuse my friend. That's how I played. So one night we was playing with this game, the team out of Fort Worth, and they snapped the ball, and I hit the man that was in front of me, and I hit him so hard till he fell back into the man that was running the ball, and he broke his leg, and that's how I played. What I try to help you to understand is that when you don't know what a man is, and you're always trying to find out what a man is, and all they told you, said, what a man was, when I come up with a man don't give in, a man don't give up, a man don't surrender, and a man don't rat on his friends. And then you put alcohol and drugs with that insanity, you can imagine what a person comes out to be. But you know, from the age of about 15 to about 19, I realized if I didn't do something different in my life, I was going to go to the penitentiary because all of my partners at that time was already going. See, what you got to understand, God has been real good to me for a long, long time. And I have to give him all the credit, and that's where it all belongs. You know, I came up with this conception of being a millionaire by the time I got to be 30. Believe me. Woo, man, I dreamed of being a millionaire because I just knew if I had enough money, then I'd be all right. If I could get the kind of right car, I'd be all right. Or the right girlfriend, I'd be all right. If I live in the right part of town, then I'd be all right. Because everything that I thought was worthwhile in this life depended come from the outside because I didn't like anything on the inside of me. So from the age of about 19 to 23, I began to make money. Hands up, hands down, and on the sideways, anywhere I could. Because I just kept making money, and I kept making money, and I kept making money. And I was partying 7 days a week. And I was working at a place called Safeway Groceries. And during that time, I was going to lose some weight. See, I probably lost about 1 million pounds in my lifetime. But hell, 1.5 million pounds, I always keep catching up. So during this time, I was going to go on this diet. And boy, this was a long time ago. It was about 74, 75, and I was going to this doctor to lose weight, and I was beginning to lose weight, and I was still drinking alcohol, smoking marijuana, different other kind of things. And one day I went to my doctor, and he gave me my medication. So a couple of friends of ours went to the swimming pool, and we were swimming in the pool, and I was full of black mollies and reds and everything else, and I was just full of drugs and alcohol. And here I am out there in the swimming pool and not feeling, I didn't feel any pain. I mean, I feel like a little whale out there. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Just floating right along. That's how I felt. You know, I'm just having a good time. I mean, it looked like the water wasn't even touching me. I'm just in a zone. I'm in a zone. Ain't they lying to you? And a friend of mine told me, say, man, should be getting ready to go. I said, well, hold on. Let me go get this one more dive. So I get on the diving board, and I hit the diving board, and it sprang down almost to the water. And in the interim of jumping up, my mind told me, so why don't you just jump over one more time? That's insane. You know, the best dive in the world don't take but one hit at a time. So I'm going to jump up one time. That wasn't good enough. So I jumped up again, hit the board again, and I flipped. I was doing a backwards 1.5 flip. Y'all should have seen me. Ooh, that was my favorite dive. After that day, it wasn't no. I hit that diving board again. And I came down, and the blackboard hit me in the back of my neck and knocked my ass out. Woo, Lord. But you know, I some of us have been spared death many a time. Some of us. But the beautiful of it is, if you stay around here long enough, we get a chance to share with somebody else to help them to understand, you might not have to go that far. You might not have to go that far to go get that insane like some of us had to do. And as I was floating down at the bottom of that water, and something came over and touched me and woke me up. And I floated back up to the top. And they took me to the hospital that night. But first I had to go home and change clothes because I didn't want to go to the hospital and look like I was nasty and dirty and stuff like that, even when I was down there about to die. Boy, insanity runs real deep. So I get out to the hospital that night, and I was already going up, so they gave me some morphine to bring me down. So I'm going up and down, going up and down, going up and down. And the doctor looked at me that night saying, are you all right, sir? I said, yeah. He said, what's going on with you? I said, well, I've been taking my medication my doctor gave me. You know, I tell him I was taking it the right way, but that's what I was doing because I had some other thing to go along with it. And that doctor told me that night, son, he said, you can go home if you want to. I said, doctor, I'm sick. You need to put me in the hospital. That was probably as close to the truth as I'd ever been at that time. I was more sicker than I thought I was. From 1973 to 1977, I did anything to anybody at any time for any reason to get some drugs or to hurt somebody because I felt like pure death. I've been dead. I've been dead long before I got here. You know, when I arrived in this program in 77, you know, and the people that was around me, my mama had been praying for me for a long time. And when I came here, and I think about those old timers that used to come to the treatment center where I was, and they would just look at me, because I was I was kind of a pit of a sight at that time. But you know, they introduced me to the 12 steps of recovery. They have 12 suggested steps. Rarely have we seen a person fail. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. I didn't have it. I didn't have it. You know, what I share with people all the time, you got a choice when you come in here. You can come in here screaming and hollering and kicking, or you can find a way to learn how to surrender. I didn't know how to surrender, so I was screaming and hollering and kicking. Didn't know how to get humble. Had no idea how to be humble. You know, so I began to learn how to look at other people. You know, and I begin to look at them people in that halfway house where I was, and they begin to change. And I say, God, if Slim can change, I can change. If Bubba can change, I can change. If Helen can change, I can change. And I begin to believe that. Step two says, came to believe. First you bring the body, no matter what kind of shape that it's in, sooner or later the mind will follow. Sooner or later, according to how much damage you've done to it. Young people have a hard time sometimes with this program because they feel like they're too young to be here, and that's a lie. You know, there's no such thing as being a too young of an alcoholic. No, it's not. I used to think that myself, but that's what almost killed me because I thought I was too young. I was 27, and supposed to be in the prime of my life, supposed to be. But here I am on my deathbed, you know, and wonder how in the hell I got there. But, you know, thank God he put some people in my life that care more about me than I did about myself. I mean, some people just put their arms around me and say, man, say, we love you just the way you are. Just hang in there and keep coming back. You know, I share with the newcomer all the time. For the person, if someone had 13 or 14 days, and I know how that is. See, I was in a halfway house for my first 2 years. That helped save my life because I knew everybody in town and what they was doing and how they was doing it. And for the first year, I told everybody to tell everybody I was dead. Because I didn't want nobody. See, I was in my late stages of addiction and alcoholism. I was in a blackout all the time. So I would come to, and people would be laughing at me. And hell, I see nothing funny. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Y'all know how it is when you come out of one of the blackouts. You be sitting around your friends, and they be looking at you, and you be looking at them, and they start to laugh, and you start to laugh. Because you don't know what it is, but it's funny, so you don't know what they're laughing at, so you laugh with them, because you don't want to look crazy. But you're already crazy. Woo! What I share with people all the time, it's very important to get some humor in your life. It's important to learn how to laugh at stuff. Sometimes even when it don't feel like you need to laugh. Because humor is healing, and it really is. You know, when I came in here, I was so serious. I was such a serious-minded person. God, I was so serious. We'd be watching the Three Stooges. I'm serious, man. And everybody be laughing. I said, what you laughing? Ain't nothing so goddamn funny. What you laughing for? You know, if you can't laugh at the Three Stooges, you in bad shape. Hey, I be wanting to fight them people. What y'all laughing? Ain't nothing in this world funny. I was mad. I was a mad wreck. But you know, God has a hell of a sense of humor. I don't care what nobody say. You know, he has a hell of a sense of humor. He said, boy, I said, You know, I think about when Bill and Bob, Dr. Bob, when they first started this program, and I can just imagine how God put his hand on the both of them, and he put them together, because he knew, even in 1934 and 35, when this deal first got started, he knew then, even up in the day, that a person like me was going to need this program. That's what I believe. So I believe the same thing for the person just came in. This program is for you. But you got to want it more than you want your wife, your kids, your job, your money, your clothes, your prestige, your power. You got to want it more than you want anything in this whole wide world. Because if you don't, it's not going to work. Because I've been tested. I've had two sisters murdered. My baby brother died from AIDS last year. I've had back surgery for this year. I got a divorce after 20 years last year. So in the last few years, I've been through hell, but I'm still here to talk about it. And that's the miracle of the power of the 12 steps and the people that God continues to put into my life. I can't do it by myself. And the first word in the 12 steps, give it all over the way, it says we. We admitted we were powerless. We admitted. Man, I could admit I was powerless because I didn't think anything was wrong with me. See, when you don't think anything wrong with you, why are you going to need a solution? Why are you going to need to try to change if you don't think anything is wrong with you? Even though everybody in town knows something wrong with you but you. And that's where most of us are when we get here. Everybody in town knows what's going on with us. They be saying, man, you need to change. You be trying to tell them, so, well, you need to go too. Y'all know what I'm talking about. See, when somebody... I never forget when they used to try to find out what I was drinking using drugs. Hell, they should have known I couldn't keep no job. I couldn't keep no money. I was doing things I was supposed to be doing. Hell, that should have gave them a cue right there. I had a problem. But they were still trying to find out whether I had a problem. I couldn't do nothing right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're looking at a man that God has truly blessed. And I have no problem sharing it with any other human being in this world. I'm not afraid to talk about it because I've been on borrowed time for a long time. That's where I choose to look at it. I've been on borrowed time. You know, by all rights, I should have been in that grave long, long time ago through all the wrecks and everything that I've been through. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. It's the only step that you'll have to take 100%. The only one. You have to put the plug in the jug. That's just the bottom line. You know, it's scary in the beginning looking at life for what it really is because it looks so big. I mean, life looks so huge. It's like it's going to just engulf you. It looks like it's just going to suck you up. But you know what I found out? The more you live life, the smaller that life really becomes. Because the more I learn how to live life on life terms and not mine. See, that, you know, they got all them cliches, live and let live, but for the grace of God, keep it simple, stupid, and all them other good words that they put on us, you know, but for the grace of God. You know, I was sharing with them earlier that I work in a detox center. And when I came into this program, I started out working in a detox center 23 years ago. And now I'm back at working in a detox center again. And I can see myself after 23 years still coming in that door. But for the grace of God, this is a very humbling experience. Humility is real important for people like me and for us. You have to get humble. You can't change by yourself. Step two, came to believe. Sooner or later, the mind will follow. Came to believe. See, what I begin to realize is that my belief system needed an overhaul. You know, if you got a car and you need your car fixed, and a friend of yours tell you, say, well, if you take it to old James over there, he'll fix it for you. In the beginning, you'll have a suspicion that it's going to work. That's where most of us come in here. We have a suspicion. You know, we've been a suspect most of our life. We've been suspecting of something. You know, people, yeah, he did it. Yeah, he was the one. You know, y'all know what I'm talking about. So now I come in here. I have a suspicion because that's all I got left. You know, because I'm so used to being paranoid and watching everything and everybody. That radar be, that radar be moving on your ass. Because I know if you get too close to me, I got to do something to you. Because you might not like me, so I can't stand for nobody else to like me because I don't like myself. So I keep my radar going all the time. Beep, 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 beep. Just how I like it all the time. Sober. I ain't talking about on the street. That's normal on the street. You better keep it going on the street. But I come into the program with my radar on, you know. What he's coming over here, he can too close, but he won't. I ain't got nothing, but he won't. I ain't got, look at, he don't know who I am doing. I better tell him who I am. But I'm scared. See, learning how to deal with fear sober is a brand new ball game. It is. I lived in fear and terror, bewilderment, danger most of my life. But here I come in here, and y'all undress me. Y'all do. I have to learn how to live with life just like it is, and it's scary as hell. Ooh, man, some days I just want to rip and run. Some days I just want to rant and act a damn fool. But y'all telling me, say, you got to change. Say, the only thing you have to change is everything. The only thing you have to change is everything. I don't know how to change, but I'm afraid to ask somebody to help me because that makes me look less than a man. But see, what I got to understand is that my ego and my pride will kill me if I'm not real careful. So I began to learn how to ask. And I didn't realize how important it is to learn how to ask. Because you'd be surprised by how, when you begin to ask other people for things, you'd be surprised how many people God will send to you to help you take care of whatever it is. Real important to learn how to ask for what you need and what you want. Because see, rejection was always a major thing for me, rejection. Never been able to deal with rejection. But in the last couple of years, God has shown me that no matter what's going on in my life, if I just depend on Him, no matter what it is, no matter whether it's rejection, a loss of a job, or loss of a marriage, or a car breaking down, or whatever it is, if I just depend on Him, you know, and just keep doing the best that I can as a human being. See, I got a part to play as a human being. My deal is to show up every day. That's my job. My job is to show up so I'll have a chance to grow up. But if I don't show up, I can't grow up. You know, because in the last few years especially, you know, I became clinically depressed because after going through that period of separation and then I got my divorce. Before I got the divorce, I went through clinical depression and I got so mad at this world. Sober. See, don't ever forget now. Just because you've been around a few days don't mean things ain't going to happen to you no more. That's a lie. Be real careful with that kind of thinking. Because your mind can set you up sober to a point where you can float above the clouds for so long you think you're supposed to be there. But see, life is down here in the dirt. That's where I started out, in the dirt. So that's where I'm going to have to stay, in the dirt. But see, God with His Spirit can raise me above whatever it is if I keep turning to Him and keep looking to Him. Because if I don't, if I keep looking to Frank and Mary and Mama and everybody else to save me, they ain't got that much power. I wish they did. I never would have been in the shape that I was in. So that tells me I'm powerless. I don't have the power. I don't have the control that I thought I did. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves, a power greater than me, as one or more, anybody that has more strength than me, that's a power greater than myself. But in the beginning, that word God used to choke me. I couldn't say it. That word God used to choke me because I knew I was going to hell. I couldn't understand why I was still breathing in and out. And I kept trying to say, God, you know, why am I still here? I don't have no reason to be in here. But you know, God don't have any stepkids. He just don't. He don't have stepkids. That means He loves us all equally. And I never could get that concept because I always felt like the worst thing in the world. But again, people begin to tell me how much they love me and how much they appreciate me just being around the little things. Be real careful. To me a few years ago, he said, son, you're the kind of person that would jump over the people in your life to get to the people that don't want to be there. Get out the way, you two damn healthy. Woo, let me go. Give me some more of that pain, Jack. Give me something I'm used to. Woo, I don't want it today, though. Woo, see what I've learned? And I've learned the hard way. If you don't want to be in my life, you probably don't need to be there. And it's really okay. It really isn't. Because most of my life, I've been codependent and thinking that I was independent. Because I thought that you thought that I thought that you thought that I thought you was better than me. But I thought you thought that I thought you thought that I was better than you. So therefore, I was going to try to prove to you that you was wrong. But see, one thing I found out, when I start trying to prove something to any other human being, then I've already lost the balance. That means I've got to take my time and my space wherever I am at that time to leave me to go to church, try to prove something to you that really don't even belong to you either. But see, I wouldn't have learned this unless I've gone through a lot of pain in this program. And I've been through a lot of it, y'all. And I'm not afraid to talk about it. Because, see, if I don't talk about it, I'm going to go crazy again. And that's the bottom line. You know, for a long time, my sponsor, I'd go to him and I'd talk to him. And I'd talk to him for 20 minutes. Then I'd talk to him for 30 minutes. And I'd talk to him for an hour. Then he's doing it. Then I would, when I get through, he said, now tell me what's going on. And I didn't know. And I ain't never been in touch with my feelings in my life. How the hell am I going to tell you what they are? But you know, I'm a good con man. I'm a good con man. I've been lying to me for a long time. So now that I'm going to lie to you. You know, I tell people all the time. People say, especially when I'm counseling with them, and I just know their little mind. I say, I expect for you to lie to me. They say, why? I say, hey, you've been lying to yourself. See, when you're lying to you, it's real important that you're going to lie to somebody else. But that's just the way it goes. If you don't know how to do something, you just don't know how to do it. But you got to get humble enough to ask somebody to say, will you help me to learn how to do this? You know, those first 2 years in my sobriety in that halfway house saved my life and gave me one at the same time. You know, I began to learn how to deal with life in a different fashion because I was always a very aggressive person, very passive aggressive. That means I would go from 0 to 100 in a matter of 2 seconds. I split your head wide open sober because I knew you didn't respect me because most of the time I wasn't respecting myself. See, I try to share with people what sobriety is about. We know how to drink and we know how to use drugs, but there comes a time in this program you have to learn how to grow up, and growing up ain't easy, y'all. Because you gotta learn how to deal with that person on the inside. The one that always tried to kill me. That's me. I gotta learn how to deal with that human being that I have to face in that mirror on a daily basis and tell that person, I love you. I love you. I love you. Even when I don't mean it, I keep telling myself, I love you. I love you. Because if after a while, they say repetition strengthens and confirms. And if I keep doing the same thing over and over, I can get some positive results. I did the same thing over and over drinking and using drugs and I got negative results. So here in the program, they teach us, repetition strengthens and confirms. Go to meetings. Don't drink. Get your sponsor. You know, help others. Repetition. And after a while, it becomes a part of your life until you don't have to ask nobody what to do. You begin to say, well, that's what I need to do. See, one thing I realize about service work, and let's get the people that put this on together. Let's give them a hand. Thank y'all very much. Yeah. Because it's real important to learn how to serve. Because one thing is always, when I've gotten to my lowest point sober, I always reach out to help somebody else. Because I've been low, y'all. It's been a time for my sponsor and my friends feared for my sanity. Because going through my divorce, I went crazy because I didn't want to turn loose in whatever my concept. Because that's what it was. My thoughts of what life should have been, how it ought to be, and how these people ought to be addressing me. And that's what it was. That was the hardest thing to turn loose. Because the material things, God can continue to get over to me. But my thoughts is what I have to deal with most of the time. The way I think, how I feel, and how I act. And as I began to go through those withdrawals from living in that house and paying for all them cars and having being Mr. A in Dallas and all that other good stuff that go along with it. And I began to hide for myself, I thought. But you know, see, it's one thing I want to share with y'all. See, if you come around here long enough, somebody gonna get to know you. And if they get to know you, they gonna know how you think, they gonna know how you feel, and they gonna know how you act. And that's gonna be real important. Because when they learn how you think and how you feel and how you act, they can tell whether you're on the beam or off the beam. And your real friends gonna tell you how they feel about you. And that's what I found. See, I don't need you sugarcoating mine, because my life is too precious today. I'm not going to play with you, because it's important to know what's going on with me, and I can't see myself. I wish I could. Hell, I would have to be him. You know? So it's important that you love me enough to tell me the truth. There are my feelings. If the only thing that hurt in my life is my feelings, I'm in good shape. If the only thing that hurt in my life is my feelings, I'm in good shape. See, because that's the reason why I drank and used drugs, because I don't like the way I felt. So here I am in this program, been here a few days, and people around me just patting me on my back and telling me that I'm doing good and I'm falling apart. And my sponsor came to me one day, I'll never forget that, him and my friend, him and Helen, they came to me. They said, Chester said, we're kind of scared for you. And this is after 20-some years of being sober. Because they saw a drastic change in my life. And they were scared for me. And I was scared for myself. Because I kept trying to grab on to something out here to fix me. I don't know, a woman, a job, or food, or whatever it is. I was trying to grab anything. And it wasn't working. And I was steady losing the grip of life. And that's what I was doing. And they sent me to Arkansas to a friend of mine up there. And he got on my case. And I thank God for people that love me enough to get on my case. I do. I don't have no problem with you getting on my case before I cuss you out or threaten you. But see, what I've begun to learn in the last few years is that God sends messengers and messengers to us every day. He does. It's up to me to make a decision whether I want to let the information come through or block it or try to change it myself or let it just come through my God-given filter and let him show me what needs to be done in my life on a given day. Because being a human being, I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. I want what I want when I want it. Screw everybody else, sober or not. So being sober, that means my ego has to be punctured. It has to be deflated. Ego is edging God out. Ego, edging God out. So today my ego has to be deflated. You know, boy, it's been a hell of a journey. And that's what it's been. It's been a hell of a journey. And I'm real grateful for it. Because, when I had my back surgery in January, I was in a lot of physical pain. But before I went up under that knife, I talked to God. I said, God, I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen. And I don't know when it's going to happen. But I trust you to take care of me. You know, and then when they put that anesthesia on me and they put me out and they cut on my back and I don't know how many hours I was out and I laid on that floor, I laid on that table. And when I came back, I was grasping for air. And as I laid up in that hospital, and I would forget, and I couldn't do a damn thing to take care of myself. I was completely helpless. But I wasn't hopeless this time. I was just helpless. There's a lot of difference. And as I laid in that bed and those nurses begin to come around and my friends and my family begin to come around, and I begin to ask God to show me people's spirit. Because see, when you lay on your back, you need to, it's real important to know who's around you. Because that negative shit can't get to you if you're not being careful. Excuse my French. And it can. And you can, it can, same thing can happen to you being standing up. And God began to show me the people that was really caring for me and the people that didn't. And I learned how to just be quiet during that time. I learned how to be quiet leader. I learned how to just learn how to shut up and listen. The same thing them old timers told me 23 years ago. Shut up, take the cat out of your ears and put it in your mouth, boy, and listen. Because I learned to listen and I listened to learn. And that's good important. That's very important for a person like me because I like to talk. But you know, sometimes I just get quiet. And I've learned how to be okay wherever I am today, even if I'm at home by myself. See, I learned today that I'm never alone unless I think I am. I'm never alone. God has always been with me. He's always been for me. He's always taken care of me. But my mind told me that God don't like me. God don't care nothing about me. So why should I even try to change anyhow? You know, in the last few weeks, you know, I've gone through some more changes. You know, some of the people that I thought that was for me, even being sober, I want to share this with you. If a person is not taking care of themselves, ain't much they can do for you. I learned that the hard way. Ooh, that's a mouthful, ain't it? It sure is. Because here I was doing things for everybody else but myself and thinking that they're going to give it back to me. But see what I've learned, that if you wait on a person to give it back to you, that you give it back to you, that you're going to miss your blessing from the ones that got something to give you in the beginning. Please be real careful about trying to stay in, trying to fix something and make something be the way you want it to be. You never know who's God got in store for you. You never know. You never know. Be real careful about being too selfish and self-centered and trying to make a person, a thing, a situation be the way you want it to be because you just might miss your own blessing. See, I've learned a lot of things. I don't have any problem sharing it with you because this is a spiritual program. See, what I can do is that I can't see myself, but if I share myself with you and you share yourself with me, then we can see each other and we can help each other along this road. See, and we never have to just fall apart and things have to, you know, sometimes things get rough for all of us. I don't care how long you've been around here. See, I don't care what you done been through. You know, if you just keep, what I've learned is that everything I go through is not always for me. Some of it's for the next person. But God might be the one that chose me to go through it to be able to help that next person. See, and if I don't find a way just to keep going through and keep going through and just keep going through and just keep going through and just, I mean, I don't give a damn, rain, shine, sleet, or snow, you know, job or no job, wife or no wife, food or no food, car or no car, you just, woo, man, you just keep them feet just clicking. I mean, you don't worry about to the side or to the back, you just keep on going. That's the only thing I know. See, that's the only thing. I don't have no magic potions. I don't have no bright ideas. All I have is my experience, strength, and hope. That's all I got. But boy, I can tell you where I came from. And if you don't want to go that direction, even sober, I made a lot of mistakes. But today I know I'm not a mistake because I make them. Big difference. See, this is a spiritual program. It's about growing up. Got a few things I want to read. It says, don't take the first drink, go to meetings, read the big book, get a sponsor, and most of all, work the steps, one day at a time. Surrender your will. Surrender your will. You know, it's amazing how, in the beginning, with step one, we admitted we were powerless, and by the time we get to step 12, God give us some power back. See? But you have to work to get there. It's not something that somebody's going to give to you. This is an inside job. Whatever you want out of life, you have to be willing to do it first. Change, playgrounds, playmates, play things. Work with others, talk, and walk the program. It's real easy to talk it, but you got to walk it. Boy, some days those feet can get very, very, very heavy. Just keep on going. I can't, he can, and I think I'll let him. Call someone if the craving comes or before you take that first drink. Find a higher power that makes sense to you. Love, acceptance is what I was looking for before, during, and after addiction. God, this is your deal. Help me to do your will. You know, my baby brother died last year, and he was laying on his hospice bed, and he was... You know, every day I would go over there the best I could when my strength would allow me to go to see him because it was hard to go see your brother and you know he's dying. But you know, I learned what the 11th step meant, to seek to comfort rather than to be comforted, because I learned how to give from my heart without any thoughts of what's going to happen. Because as I would go over there and I would go there and talk to my brother, and I used to get mad at my family because they wouldn't go over there and see him as much as I thought they should have been doing. But see, it's one thing I learned out about life. I can't worry about nobody else anymore. I just can't. You know, if they choose to do what they need to do for themselves, then that's fine. But see, God gave me something to do, and it's the reason why he put me on the face of this earth. So I got to learn how to find out what my purpose is. And one thing I know is to keep staying sober, don't go crazy, don't hurt myself, and don't hurt nobody else. And if I can just keep doing them things on a daily basis, I got a good shot. See, I might not be rich like I thought I was supposed to be, you know, but God, thank God I ain't poor. You understand? That means as long as my spirit is rich, I am never poor. Don't forget that. I might not have enough to pay the bills. I might not have enough to get the car fixed. But at the same time, if my spirit is rich, then I'm as rich as any other human being on the face of this earth. If you can conceive it and believe it, you can achieve it. That's the reason why a lot of times when a newcomer comes in here and we just take them and we just... See, people took me and led me. They didn't say, you need to do this over here. They came and got me. They put their arms around me. They sheltered me. They protected me, even from myself. They just kept taking care of me, and I'm always grateful for those people. If it is to be, it is up to me. I got a little story I always like to tell, and it goes something like this. It says, once upon a time, there was this bird. I got to get some water. I talk fast. And it was down like this part of the year, and it was getting cold up north, and his family was getting ready to leave. You know, birds running a flock. So they told him, said, come on, man, come on, go with the rest of us. And this little bird said, no, man, say, I'm going to stay right here, and I'm going to chill for a couple of more days. So he stayed right there with his homies, and they were just kicking it for a while. And then he said, well, I guess I'll take off. So he began to take off, and it began to rain. And then it began to sleet, and then it began to snow, and then it began to freeze. And the little bird was flying as hard as it can with the blizzards coming through, and next thing you know, he fell to the ground. It was just shivering and shaking. I mean, his little butt just got to getting real cold. And he just began to say, oh, Lord, please don't let me die like this. Oh, Lord, please don't let me die like this. By that time, a cow came by and crapped on him. And his little bird was, he was still shivering and shaking, and his little wings began to thaw out, and it began to get a little warmer, and he said, damn, I don't know if I'm going to die from the stink or from being cold. So while he was laying in this part of manure, a wolf came by. And the bird was over that little pile of manure, was just warm, taking care of his business, having a good time. And the wolf heard him over there making up all this noise. So the wolf went over there and saw the little bird and kicked the shit off of him, rushed down there and put his mouth on him, and ate him. The moral of the story is, ladies and gentlemen, sometime when you're in a warm pile of shit, keep your mouth quiet. And everybody that take it off of you is not your enemy. And everybody that craps on you is not your friend. But it's the other way around. Everybody that craps on you is not your enemy. And everybody that take it off of you is not your friend. See, what you have to learn sometime even in the program, there's a thing called quiet. Learn how to let the Spirit comes through to show me what I need to do and when to do it and who I need to do it with. But see, today I believe in prayer. I believe in prayer and meditating. Because on the way down here, I did a lot of praying. So when we leave here tonight, we'll pray some more. You know, he got a cell phone, and I got one too. God just hook us up. But you know, sometimes you got to have a little adventure in your life. You know, sometimes we just need some of us to wake our ass up. Because some of us can get in here and we get to rocking. You know, like some little kids, how we rock them in them cradles, you rock them for so long, and that's what you're supposed to do. But see, sometimes your little butt has to bump. About 7-8 years ago, I was working at a treatment center, and I was doing real good, making all kind of money and having a good time. And I said to myself, I said, ooh, man, I can live like this the rest of my life. Be careful what you say, because things can change. Be careful. Be real careful. See, I'm not trying to scare you. What I'm trying to help you to understand, that the only thing any of us have in this room tonight is today. That's it. That's it. I don't care how many years you've been around here, what you done done, who you done it for, who you done it to. All any of us have is tonight. I always try to end with something like this. If you are able to take a flight from Austin and go through the greatest city in the world. Y'all know what it is, right? Dallas, 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 Dallas. There you go, there you go. This is my speech now. This is one time I get a chance to be right. And it don't make no difference after a while. We're all in the same place at the same time, so that's beautiful. And you get a chance to go there and go from Dallas to New York and eat breakfast and go from New York to Paris to eat lunch, and go from Paris to Egypt to eat dinner. And if you come through this world and you miss the love and the grace and the peace of a loving God, you miss it all. You know, it's good to be. It's real good to be. But it's more important to be yourself, whomever that might be, whatever that might be. And that's why step 4, 5, 6, and 7 are so important, because they separate the men from the boys and the girls from the women. The steps separate. And it's kind of like being in one of those shows. See, in the beginning, everybody's on ground level. Everybody. And then they fire it up and they heat it up. It takes a lot of heat, you understand, to boost you. That's why they call them boosters. You know, they got them boosters on both sides and they thrust them up into the air. And all of us get that opportunity. But see, what you got to understand, once you get up there, then you got to have what we call separation. In order to make it in this program, you got to learn how to separate. I don't give a damn who you are. And it's not easy. Because what will happen is you can get locked into a life, even in sobriety, where you think things are supposed to be a certain way, and you can miss the rest of your life. That might not make sense to a lot of people. It might make sense to some. Because this is about change. You got to keep on changing. You just got to keep on changing. And after a while, you get up to that point, and recovery is way up here. See, being sober is down here. That's where all of us start out. But when you get up here, this is where you separate recovery. And that's where you have to have that thrust to get you up in that high altitude. And see, the higher up you go and the longer you stay around, the thinner the air becomes. And it's the truth. Because you just got to, ooh-wee. You just can't quit. It's like something inside of you just have to say, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. I'm worth it. No matter what's going on, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. You just have to say, ooh, I just can't quit today. You know, I heard somebody say this many years ago, and I've adopted it. It says, God, I thank you for the thing that you've given me. I thank you for the thing that you've taken away. And most of all, I thank you for the thing that you have left. Family has always been a positive and a negative in my life. You know, I told my son 2 or 3 days ago I needed some money, which I'd always paid for some business for me and him took care of, and he didn't bring me my money. And I just looked at him. I said, well, Lord, see, I used to waste a lot of time with stuff like that because those are what we call distractions, and that's what they're for. Either something's going to make you or it's going to break you. Or it's going to make you grow or it's going to make you stop. See, distractions come into our life on a daily basis for a reason, to give us a choice. Do I want to take part in that? Or do I want to keep on going the way I'm going, if even though I don't know which way I'm going? You know, today I choose not to be distracted as much as humanly possible, and that's really important. God, I thank you for the thing that you give me. God, I thank you for the thing that you've taken away. And most of all, I thank you for the thing that you have left. You know, it's been a real pleasure down here this evening, and just to see so many people having such a good time. And, you know, this is Saturday night. Saturday night. Saturday night. Honky tonk. Jew joints, they popping. But you know, here we are, we on one accord, and we loving one another, and we caring about what happens to one another, and that's change, and that's real good. You know, if nobody told you today that they love you, I do. Thank y'all, and thank y'all for having me. Thank you very much.